This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A main, no rain.
Whoa, hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And I'm joined as always by JD by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Dude, I'm fried, man. We had finals at school this week, and then we had a high school tournament Friday, Saturday, and then we had a little kids tournament today, and I didn't get home till about 7 o'clock at night. And just, man, I'm so glad we're in winter break right now. And then tomorrow we're running a JV tournament at the high school because we're on break. And then I have to run a practice for the high school kids. And then I have to run a practice for the little kids. And then Christmas Eve, we've got a practice in the morning. We get Christmas Day off. And then we're hosting a big dual team tournament at our school Saturday or Friday and Saturday. Dude, I'm like, it just doesn't stop. Like it's a thing, man.
Wrestling season's a mofo right now.
It sure is. It sure is. And we got kids. We got bit real bad by the staph infection bug.
Dude, that staph infection in wrestling, it's the worst.
Oh, I've had it.
It is disgusting. I know you've probably had to do this before, but I remember like my wrestling coach in high school bitching me out and making me bleach all of the mats. we all had to do it at some point, but there was one day where I had to bleach the entire mat, like from the whole gym floor, because I was in trouble.
You got to clean the mat because it's super important. We go to these big tournaments, right? Like we don't go to any small tournament. We don't go to any like 1 day tournaments. All our tournaments are 2 days. We're always staying in a hotel somewhere. We're traveling. We were at one in Iowa about 2.5 weeks ago, something like that. And we came back, and one of my kids, he's like, man, my jaw hurts. And his jaw was really small. And then I look, and he's hit by his jaw. I'm like, kind of long hair. He's got like bad joke with him. He's got bangs. His hair kind of covers his forehead. I'm looking at his forehead, and I see a little spot there. And I say, pull your hair back. So he goes like this, pulls his hair back. And it looks like someone layered pepperoni on his forehead.
And I'm trying to hide the staff.
Yes, he was. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude. I yelled at him. I said, get the F out of the room. Call your dad. Get to a doctor now. Well, he had staph and herpes. Oh, he'd have his finger lanced because it was so full of pus. It's all over his head. It got into his eyes. It spread on his back. We got three other kids that he works out with have it. We have another kid with a concussion. We got like we went to a tournament. There's 14 weight classes. I think we brought seven kids, like for the first time ever. I got there and I was like, you know, we just don't got it right now. You know, it was just it was a thing. You know, so it's a thing right now. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I want to give a big shout. My wife is never going to watch our show or listen to it, but I do want to give her a big shout out. Went to her graduation yesterday at the University of Hawaii. That was a really big moment for her. So that was
congrats.
So
cool. Congrats, Mrs. G.
Yeah. She, dude, she doubled up on her classes over the summer while she was pregnant because she wanted to finish school before she had the baby. Smart. And she was able to finish all of her classes like a month before the baby was born. And that way she would be able to walk in her graduation this December. Because if not, she was thinking about taking like a semester or two off while she was pregnant. But she's like, no, I just want to knock it out now. So she doubled up on classes and was able to knock it out. And she got honors, like distinguished honors, like 3.9 GPA from the University of Hawaii. And like, I went to internet school and I have a 4.0, but they're like, you have to be like really, really stupid not to get a 4.0 in my internet school. But for like a 3.9, she thought it was like 3.95 at UH. That's pretty damn good.
It's very impressive. I'm also in internet school with a 4.0 GPA. And I agree. One need be a complete idiot not to have. But like, you have to have a C average to graduate. I'm like, if you have a C average doing this, you're a complete numbskull.
Yeah.
So I'm loving your wife right now, dude. I'm super proud of you guys. Like, the fact that she got that done is awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So for those of you, that join the military when you get married, you can transfer over your GI Bill benefits to your spouse. Oh. And so I was able to put my wife through school. So I had a small hand in it. I had to, you know, just sign on the dotted line to the military. I was able to help out with that. So
that's cool. I didn't know that, actually. That's pretty cool. You could do
so that. It's called the post 9/11 GI Bill. You weren't always able to do that. But then at some point during my career, they said, oh, yeah, you can transfer benefits to your dependents. So spouses, children, stuff like that. And you can actually like break it up to where certain like people get certain percentage, but I put 100% to her because I was like,
oh, okay.
I wanted to be able to pay for her to go all the way through her bachelor's degree. So to pay for your all the way up to bachelor's. So pretty cool.
That is cool. Is she going to try to get a master's, or is she just going to go right into?
No. So she's going to definitely try to get a master's, but we just had the baby. So she might take a little bit of time off, but we're going to wait till we get to where we're going next. So nice. My retirement application package is still pending like final approval. They could always say no, because I technically owe them a one more year in Hawaii. So I'm actually leaving Hawaii a year early to retire, but I'm over 20 years, but like if you're overseas and you agree to stay overseas for 4 years, they want you to stay for 4 years. But I was able to, I filed a waiver claim, and so we're just seeing if they're going to approve the waiver. I think they will. So once we get that news and I get those retirement orders, then we're going to start looking at possible colleges in and around where we're going on the South Carolina side of Charlotte, essentially, because Charlotte is like right across the border of South Carolina. Yeah. So it's like right there. So we're going to live on the South Carolina side because the military benefits are better, especially for retirees. And so if you're 100%, if you get 100% disability rating from the VA, which I got lots of scars and lots of stuff going on with me. So I get the feeling I'm going to be there. Like, somebody's like calculating all the different things that have wrong with me, and they're like, man, you're like 168% right now. So, like, so, but if you're at least 100%, which is the highest you can get, your family gets to go to college for free. So, so if we do that, she'll get vouchers to be able to get her master's degree as long as we do it in the right schools.
Will your son and daughter be able to do that for free later on down the line?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, as long as what a deal.
Yeah. As long as South Carolina still has that deal in place, which they're like, you know, like, you know, I'll be honest, Republican states typically pander to the military a lot more than the Democratic states. So
that's true.
So despite my political views of my youth, I have decided to move to a red state because they're going to take care of me. And that's really all I care about is me and my family. So, that's where I'm going. I'm going to go to a red state.
It's a very Republican way of looking at it, but yeah. That's the right move for sure.
Yeah. When you're in your 40s, that's what you got, like, and you got kids, like, that's the most thing to you is like, okay, where am I going to be able to take care of my family the best? And like, I found an area to be able to do that.
That's why I'm in grad school right now, and I'm going to get my degree in my master's degree in May, and then I got to get my plus 45 in the next year after that, and then I've maxed out as what a teacher can make, and then it's just time in, then it's just time served at that point. And then you're like in prison and you're just counting down the years.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody came here to listen to us talk about the future of our lives.
They're invested in Mike and JD.
They did come here to talk about wrestling. And I know we're going to have some TNA fans in the chat. They got a new TV deal. We're going to talk about that.
I didn't know. I'm behind that TNA. Well, you got to educate me on this later.
Well, we're going to save that one to the end because I want them to stay and listen. So, and I didn't get a chance to do Brace for Impact yesterday because I had to get up a lot earlier and get ready and get down to the school much earlier than I had anticipated. So it really is like right at the time that I'm recording, I actually had to get everything ready for us to go down to the graduation at the college. So I didn't get a chance to do Brace for Impact. So we'll do a little bit of that here at the end of the show. We'll talk some TNA, talk their new TV deal. But I did have a couple of cliffhangers from the previous episode that we recorded on Thursday. So if you're listening to this, we're recording Sunday night. Thank you for being here. Give us a like, comment, and subscribe. Regardless if you're up on Voices of Wrestling on the Mike and JD Show Network, it helps both channels out. So hit that like, hit that thumbs up for us. I greatly appreciate it. Or if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, please give us a 5-star review. This will serve as your Christmas week episode. We're going to be off the rest of the week. That doesn't mean that JD and I can't just whip out our phones or just hop on solo and we're only whipping out our phones here. It's going to cost them a lot more money for anything else to get whipped out. But phones will be whipped out at some point during the week if we decide to. If there's breaking news or if there's something we want to talk about, we can do that throughout the week. So this will serve as your episode for the week. I know we're doing it quite a bit early. It's because JD just spilled out the 10,000 things he's got to do. And I went solo on Thursday night, literally at the very last minute because JD's power went out and the internet went out. The whole thing was down. So I was like, screw it. We'll do it live. Right. So we're about to go on live and everything shut down for JD. So I recorded by myself. So I did give a couple of cliffhangers. You said you had a rant that you wanted to talk about AEW in particular, about some of their storytelling that they have going on.
Yeah, you know, I was super hot about this when we were planning the show on Thursday before I lost my power and we lost the dual meet and I lost all energy and faith for at that point. I'm a big storytelling guy and I haven't gone off on one of these tangents in a while. And I kind of wanted to do it again because I've been reading a lot about storytelling in wrestling and just listening to our the flagship program of the Voices of Wrestling Network. It got me thinking a little bit about storytelling in wrestling. And I think everyone always talks about the follow-up in AEW being the real problem. Like Tony will come out balls to the wall with something. And then somewhere along the lines, it loses it. I'm thinking in particular, the Death Riders, right? Cause when they tried to murder Bryan Danielson in front of my 8-year-old son at All Out, that was a great conversation to have with his mother. I was really hopeful because I thought we were going somewhere and Moxley seemed to have this mission statement and Wade Keller is really big on talking about what's the mission statement. And that's an important thing to do because when we talk about storytelling. This is what I think that I like to do more than most people. I hate using this phrase, people in the space, right? Is they just talk about story, story, story. And they don't really know what story means. And again, I'm going to be a snob here because I have a background in creative writing, written a bunch of books, done a lot of studying on the subject. A story is when you boil it down to its firm essence, this is Robert McKee. This isn't JD Oliva talking. A story is you have a character. He has a goal. Something is standing in the way of his goal. Could be anything. Could be an enemy. Could be nature. Could be his own self confidence. It could be, he shit his pants. Like it could literally be anything. Could be the obstacle. This is why wrestling is so easy to do with this, with just a basic story, right? It's not all the bells and whistles. Like WWE fans was like, well, WWE, those stories, they have all this stuff with the magic. And like, that's not what makes a story. A story is very human emotions of something that's trying to prevent me from hitting my goal. Wrestling, super easy to get that. This guy's preventing it. I want the title. This is standing in my way. Blah, blah, blah. Week one of the Death Riders, John Moxley's like, we're taking over AEW. We're going to take AEW back. This is what we're doing. What's in the way? Right? Like, what's preventing?
They had some jabronis in the parking lot at one point.
That's what I'm talking about. Is this what? Okay. My hope for this was it would be kind of like a retread of the NWO. I don't think there's anything wrong with retreading stories in wrestling because, again, there's only 7 stories that can be told. right? Literally, there's literally seven stories you could tell. There was a time I could have told you all seven of them. I can't do that anymore. I'm no longer that kind of a college student. But you just, all stories are repeats, and it all comes down to execution and the bells and whistles. So it's fine if you retread the NWO. The NWO was successful. We knew what the NWO wanted. We had it, and we had that mission statement doled out every week for 2 years, right? And consequently, the rivals of the NWO constantly told you what their goal was, right? And right, it was this, it was boiled down to the Hulk Hogan stories. Hulk Hogan, the NWO is basically Hulk Hogan has lost it, right? Hulk Hogan has lost a step. In order to, for him to get back to where he needs to be, because he's an insecure man, right? He surrounded himself with an army to keep himself on top. So it was very much like what was playing out in real life was actually happening on the screen too. So it was a real life imitating art thing. So that was the Hulk Hogan character arc at that point, right? I'm going to keep myself on top, and I've built up all these pawns to prop me up. And then you had the Sting character, right? Sting is going to take this down because everyone had lost faith in him, right? What is Sting fighting? Sting is fighting against the NWO. He's fighting against WCW, the people who he had trusted, who had lost faith in him. Really good stories. And I think that's what made the NWO really work, is like when you got that initial wave done of like, we're taking over, we're bulldozing, and they just destroyed the company right away. Then you start the Sting archetype. Where is Sting? What is Sting about? And that became as important as the NWO itself, which is why everything kind of fizzles out after Starrcade 97, because the story was done. Right. And the next year, it really went all over the place because they didn't realize that they had finished the story. Right. So we had Moxley being Hogan, right? We had our established NWO. They were doing things by the book. And then it seemed like they lost their way, like almost less than a month in.
Yeah.
Like there was no like, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This is how we're going to do it. They lost a lot of that how. They told us why. They didn't tell us how or what the plan was. Like, we're going to take over AEW. What does that mean? You're going to take over AEW. What does that mean? What are you from who? From how? How is it going to be different when the Death Rider is running it? And now what is the opposition? Who is in its, who is standing in the way? How are they standing in the way? Like, they gave us Orange Cassidy, a character who by his very nature is indefinable. He has no real goal, and I had to expand the character, but I think we can all admit it didn't work, right? The buy rate's down. It just, we have this four-way that's really lost. So we never had that, this is where I'm going. This is how we have to fight back. Like, so again, this is where people say Tony struggles with story, and he really does. It's yeah. Like, where is this? Where are we going with this? Like, what, it's no secret that we've completely lost interest in this. Right? Because we don't have, it's not clearly defined roles, but it's clearly defined goals, right? There are no longer clearly defined goals for these characters at this point. So it's like the pace is lost. Like, the beats don't matter, and the beats aren't existent because nothing is happening, right? What started out interesting is just kind of there. And this happens with a lot of their stories, is they'll have like this really interesting launching point. And the finishes are usually okay because the pay-per-views are usually pretty good because they're wrestling-based. But it's the stuff in the middle that really kind of loses it, right? And it's that week-to-week where they really struggle. They really struggled in episodic storytelling over the last 2 years, roughly. And I think this is a prime example because everybody was really interested in evil Jon Moxley. And what's happened? Like, what moments have occurred on this show that have built into that? Who is his antagonist and standing? Who is the guy that's going to take him out? We all suspect it could be Darby Allin or something like that, but it's not present. Like, what threat have they posed since, you know, murdering? They nearly murdered Orange Cassidy. They nearly murdered Bryan Danielson. But I mean, like, week to week, what's there? You know, are they really taking over? Like, is the Hurt, like, what's the difference between the Death Riders and Hurt and the Hurt Syndicate right now?
Nothing.
That's what I'm saying.
Just, like, I think the Death Riders are a bit more savage. I think they're a bit more sadistic than Hurt Syndicate, but that's really it. And I think that the Death Riders, their story, it went from we're taking over and it evolved into, well, these guys need to just step up And to get them to step up, they're murdering them, which I don't know is all that helpful for them to step up to be better stars.
And it doesn't help when Excalibur is telling us they're fighting for the soul of AEW. What does that mean? That's a platitude. Yeah. Like, and again, I'm not going to get angry and fiery about this. I'm trying to do this as like clinically as possible and not come at it as an attack point or being like, you're being mean or you're attacking them. Like, if you want to tell me anything, tell me I'm being a snob. I can live with that. What does this mean? We're battling over the soul of AEW. Why do we have to constantly reinforce that this company used to be better? Like, WWE never tells you it used to be better. They're always telling you this is the greatest era ever, right? And they say it to you to the minions believe it, right? They make their own reality. Someone says in the chat, be mean. I don't want to be mean because I have been mean. I have gone crazy. And I think it diffuses my argument when I do that.
I think when you go too, because they have listened to our show before.
I know,
we have verified that. And if we go too mean, at some point we lose them.
I know.
So this is very much JD trying to be constructive criticism to get through to the powers that be that have actually listened to the show. And JD knows for a fact that I'm going to clip this and I'm going to label it to get the attention of the right people because there's something missing with the product.
There is. And again, I've said this before numerous times. I used to love Wednesdays. Wednesday used to be my favorite day of the week. And now I got kids practice on Wednesday, and Wednesday's become I used to watch the night show, but it's like I get up early to lift on Wednesdays and I come home and I'm tired, and it's like, well, I can hang out with my wife a little bit before bed, or I can stay up late and watch Dynamite. And it's just like the show is really struggling. And honest to God, it's waiting for the West Coast feed kind of breaks me sometimes. I think I can be more engaged because I can start the show whenever. You know, I don't have to wait for that to go. I don't have to wait for commercials. I think that's going to be better for me personally. But at the same time, I'm not as engaged as I once was. And it's not being angry. And I've seen this, right? And this is me talking, right? When I'm really, and I've had many, many shows where I've gone off and been all fired up, and I can be like Coach JD. Coach JD is a fucking maniac. And I don't want to be that guy right now because I don't feel like the message gets delivered. I want to be as constructive as possible. And I don't want to be Eric Bischoff and be like, they suck, or something like that. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to even be Brian Alvarez, who I think he loses the plot on a lot of his criticisms. And I think that when you sit there and praise NXT, a show that has zero logic ever, as good storytelling, I think it hurts your case. So what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to talk this in the most clinical ways as possible. And with that giant room of writers that they have right now, and the fact that the vast majority of them come from Vince, where this stuff isn't important, right? It's not a coincidence that their show got better when that mindset left.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that mindset now has infiltrated AEW because of all the influencers in this space. I hate that phrase, saying, well, you have to bring more WWE guys in. So they trimmed the fat over there and they've been feasting on fat here. So all you've done is just intaking bad garbage. Like, you're just eating fat. You're not getting to the meat of things. So you have a lot of stuff happening, and stuff happening isn't story beats. Right. It's just stuff to fill time on a show. And that's not good. It doesn't create for a good viewing experience. And I'm not wrong on this. Look at the ratings. Look at the ticket sales. Look at the pay-per-views. It's all gone down. It's all gone down. And it is because the stories aren't as engaging. And we talked on this show a couple weeks ago where I proposed they do a lot more sports-based storylines just to differentiate them. Playing for a contract, winners get X amount of dollars. Taking more influence from the sporting world because it's different than what WWE does. So I'm not saying you have to have, the Undertaker with his druids and stuff, because that's not story either, right? Yeah. That's just bells and whistles. A story at its core is character A wants something. He can't get it because this other thing is in his way. And the story is literally the struggle to get from A to B. That's it. That's all you need. And it's so easily ignored.
Yeah. I feel like they're missing that with a lot of the different characters. What is Will Ospreay's goal right now?
Yeah, great question.
Other than to have the best match every night. And I'll be honest, like the guy who has the best match every night, that doesn't really matter too much.
No.
It's like, are you winning, bro? Because he's lost two matches in 4 days in this tournament. And I really feel like he was their hottest character at the beginning of the year. He was, of all the big signings that they had to start the year off with Okada and Mercedes Moné, I feel like he was really the one that resonated with the audience the most. And we all felt like he was going to be the guy to carry the company forward into the future. And he has lost a lot of luster towards the end of the year.
I think what hurt him a lot was, quite honestly, losing to Swerve. And again, like well, if you're a hot character, you could lose and come back. And I think that's true when the company is really hot. When the company isn't hot, you have to be building somebody, and they haven't really built anybody. Wow, keep it Wolfson.
Yeah, that's Junkyard Akiyama on Twitter. He's got a couple of different aliases, by the way.
Okay. I like that guy. He's got good stuff, actually. Ospreay's lost seven of his last nine. And I don't think it's bad to have like this is a Triple H trope that he likes to do. Tony does do a lot too, is you have a character lose a lot and then they get hot and have the comeback. And I think that's fine. That's adversity. I think characters need to overcome adversity. The problem is I don't feel like there's a narrative driving Will right now. I feel like right now he's just a good wrestler who's losing matches. And I think he's lost a lot of his connection to the audience.
Yeah.
Through no fault of his own. Maybe, I know he volunteered to lose to Swerve and it was a hot match and it was like, it was cool in the moment, but at the same time, like, where are we going?
Yeah.
Where are we going? Like, there's nowhere, no one has a very clearly defined role right now. Garcia did. Like, in they did a good job with building Daniel Garcia when he had that MJF and he got hot again. Like, there was a nice little story they told. And once he had that TNT title, where are we going? You know, where are we going? So, I mean, like, it's when you have this, and again, you can make this work, right? I'm a comic book guy. Like, you read team comic books where everyone has like a story going on. You can balance these things, right? You can't push everybody at once, but you can push enough people at once. And I feel like they just throw a bunch of balls in the air and sometimes they get caught and sometimes they get dropped. And it's not great. You know, I feel like they could be better. And I feel like from a narrative perspective, they're really lacking. And like all people want is, because all Vince cared about was moments, moments, moments. We need big moments. And like, no, you don't.
You can have those, but you need the characters, you need the stories. It needs to lead to big moments, but then those big moments have to resonate for a long, long term. Right. And it has to be more than big moments in matches.
Correct.
Because we have so many good matches all over every television show. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of doing all the same stuff, just AEW's doing more of it. And we've kind of lost all of that. And so when you get your teeth sunk into an actual storyline and a character that has this goal and all these obstacles are in its path, you really start to, they really start to get over. And I, you know, give them credit, but the Cody Rhodes thing is like the perfect example of a story and then a big payoff at the end, and that everything worked. We just kind of need that for AEW, and it just seems like we thought we were having that. And I think that, you know, Muse was on the show over the summer talking about doing something similar with Will Ospreay, and it seems like there's no hope for that even happening, especially since, you know, the 2025 win at Wembley Stadium is not going to happen. They're not going to Wembley this coming up year. They're doing it in Texas. I don't think Ospreay having a big moment in Texas is going to, I mean, he could, I mean, it's going to be a big show, but it's not going to be, you know, upwards of 50,000. Looks like they might get 15,000 to 20,000 in there. But I don't know. I just feel like he was the character that people wanted to get behind the most. And so, like, here towards the end of the year, he's much colder than he was when he first came.
I'm not going to fault him on the Daniels thing, because the Daniels thing was cool. Right. I did think the Daniels story.
It's hard not to love that.
It is. That was actually a pretty successful story that they told with a good ending. Like, that actually... Yeah. That actually worked. And again, they squandered it. They built up Bryan Danielson and they sacrificed him to Jon Moxley, which made sense. But where have we gone since?
Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing, is they have done this before. Hangman Page had a great 2-year story arc, right? From showing up and blowing the moment with Jericho at the very first pay-per-view, the tag team with Kenny Omega, finding himself winning the title at Full Gear. Right. That was a good story. CM Punk, when he came in, was a good story. I'm on my comeback, right? I want one more taste at the big time. Like, that was a good story. And we had a good story with him and MJF, too, that was really incomplete at the end because, you know, crazy people. But, yeah, you know, like, they can tell stories in this company. They told really good ones before they brought in, and someone got mad at me in the comments a couple weeks ago when I was burying Pepperman. Like that was
Akiyama, but he was being sarcastic. Oh. He buries her every day.
Yeah, he puts so many of these things. I can't follow him. I did. I fell for it. He got me twice now.
He's got too many gimmick names. I guess
I know. I can't keep track of the gimmicks. Like, okay, fair enough then. Like, I mean, I feel like we have too many. There's so many cooks. There's so many cooks in the kitchen right now, and the problem is some of them are making soup and some of them are making pancakes. And soupy pancakes, like, it doesn't work, you know. We have no singular unified vision in this company anymore, and it's a problem.
They're losing their identity. The identity's gone. The feeling comes and goes. It depends. Like Wednesday, I had the feeling during the Ospreay Darby match, and then the feeling was gone by the end of the show because I just didn't really like the closing angle. Of the episode, and then it started to come back. I was getting excited again for AEW to have a big weekend at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I love the Hammerstein Ballroom, they sold out three nights in a row, so kudos to them. Now we're talking 1,200-1,300 people, so it wasn't like that big, but I think that can expand out to 2,000, but you know, they did 1,300 people three nights in a row. I think that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. For them and
for where they are right now.
What's that?
So for where they are right now, it's good.
Yeah, for where they are right now. And I think and that was, you know, the key headline of the show is like they had a really big weekend in a much smaller venue. And I hope nobody thinks that I'm like taking shots at them. I think this is a good thing. I think them downsizing a little bit, realizing where they're at, and, you know, keeping it more simple as opposed to going back to these big basketball arenas and then putting a couple of thousand people into a basketball arena. Let's put in 2,000 or 3,000 people in a 5,000 seater, or like what they did over the weekend, go a couple nights in a row and then put 1,300 people in a 2,000 seat arena. It's crazy.
I want to address this company from this comment from Myron Curino. 25,000 in a stadium that has a capacity to do 40,000 as a baseball stadium while spacing in the field is not good enough when you're the number two company in the world. Here's what I say to you. That's not right. That's stupid. I don't mean to bury you, but that's 100% incorrect. 25,000 tickets is a lot of tickets sold. Yeah. Right.
Especially if you're down to the number two, especially.
Correct. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is there's not been a number two company in the world that sold 25,000 tickets to a single show since WCW in the 1990s. So we're knocking on the door 30 years at this point. Like I'm sorry, man, but that's a very uneducated statement. Like I just took it on the company, but I mean, like, we have to be realistic about these things at the same time. Like, nobody else is selling those kind of tickets right now. And I want you to look back at SummerSlam 2022, right? With Triple H's first show when they were at the Titans Stadium, right? A good chunk of that stadium was tarped off.
Yeah.
And all that. They didn't sell out that thing. They tarped off a good chunk of that. And they carved it off so it looked like every wrestling company does when you sell tickets like that.
It's a normal thing to do.
Right.
They the way that they're going to set it up, you're not really going to tell that there's only I think they have it set up for like 18,000 people, and they'll probably sell that out, and they might open up more seats as they get closer, but I don't see that being like even a sign of weakness or anything. I think that's a good show for them. That's a good show. That's not a big deal.
No, and we cannot discount 1,000 people in an arena, in a stadium. Like, do I think they should be running stadium shows? No, I really don't. I think that's an ego thing at this point. But if you can get 25,000 people, 20,000 people into a stadium in one day, that's a good thing. That means your company isn't dead. WCW wasn't doing that in 99 on, right? That wasn't happening. So, I mean, the company is like, it's struggling, but it's not on a lifeline. You know, it's not dead. Like I'm saying, it's like it can't be turned around, because remember, people had completely lost faith in WWE before Cody came back. And then they started getting better, right? Yeah. It did. Well, people are invested now.
They brought over AEW, two of their top babyface of all time, and CM Punk, and then they got Cody. Mm-hmm. And look at the business turnaround. And then, of course, you know, Vince has to leave, so that was obviously helpful. But
I mean, like,
he started to turn around before Vince left, but it really started to really spark with once he was out of there completely.
And I'll be honest with you, I think it's over. I think they've peaked and they're starting to try. I think the Saturday night's main event, the Saturday night's main event rating is proof of that.
Yeah, right? We're gonna get to that in a minute. I still want to finish. I think in segments because I got to clip this stuff for YouTube.
So. Fair. I got that ADD where I'm always all over the place.
So. Yeah. But I did want to compliment them some more on doing the hammer sign over the weekend. I thought that Ring of Honor was mostly a pretty good show. But they cannot stay away from some of their worst tendencies. They have some matches with no story that just kind of like guys that they're throwing out there. Like, it just seems like Tony Khan just likes these guys and throws them out there. Like Shibata versus Tommy Billington sounds great to me. Right. But there wasn't really much outside of that. That was a fun match. I thought that was pretty cool.
Can I counter you on that?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I thought that was a fun thing.
I think Ring of Honor is the place you can do that.
Yes, yes, like, but Ring of Honor shouldn't be the place that you put Chris Jericho versus Matt Cardona for the world title. Like, I just thought that was awful.
But it sold. Like, people bought tickets for it. And with Ring, and here's my thought with Ring of Honor is who cares about Ring of Honor, right?
That is true. It is a dead company.
You know, I mean, like, it's if they could get they the fact they got anything for a Ring of Honor show is impressive to me at this point because the show doesn't exist. It's not a real until it gets this alleged True TV spot that we've talked. I feel like we've talked about this for a year. Until that's real, Ring of Honor isn't real. Like, I know like six people that watch an Honor Club every week, and I went to a Ring of Honor taping and went to go get something to drink. At the time, because like there is nothing. Yeah, I was like the Fightful chick that bitched about the.
You cut out. Say that again.
I'm sorry. I was making fun of Fightful. I said I was like, I was wrestling, but then went and got. That's me. That no, I mean, like, I think Ring of Honor can be the place where Tony throws out just, hey, this is a cool match. Because they don't have anywhere to, because they don't have a show. It's not real, which was, could be frank. That was a lot of Ring of Honor. That was what kind of, especially toward the end.
Yeah. I mean, Ring of Honor was, I don't want to say that they didn't have a lot of storylines as they did, but a lot of shows are independent of themselves. Like you could just do kind of cool matches for the sake of cool matches. And I thought that was part of Ring of Honor's charm. And AEW was born out of Ring of Honor. You know, he signed all the top talent from Ring of Honor and all the top English-speaking talent from New Japan and kind of put him into a company and added Chris Jericho and John Moxley to the mix there. And then, boom, now you got a company. But I thought Final Battle and the Hammerstein was really cool. And I think that we'll talk about that in a sec.
I want to talk about this.
I thought Ring of Honor Final Battle was pretty cool. I thought Jericho versus Cardona was terrible. At one point, there was a rumor going around that Cardona had a contract offer from Tony Khan. I think that might be off the table now. I think because he had come out after that and said he's only signed to the major wrestling figure podcast or whatever it's called, and that he's still going to work a Game Changer. I don't think that he's signing here, and I don't think Tony's going to bring him in after that. I thought that him and Jericho just were a bad mix, and it doesn't scream Ring of Honor to me, that match. And I hated it going in. And then I was like, what? I'll go ahead and check it out. Cause I talked so much shit about it going into the match. I was like, okay, I want to at least see it play out. And then it was as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was pretty crappy, that match.
Not surprised. Matt Cardona's not great. Never really has been.
He's not a bad worker, but he's not Ring of Honor. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. He's not great.
And it's okay to have the antithesis of Ring of Honor in the company. That's kind of what Jericho is right now. Like Jericho is like the anti-ROH and he's, you know, kind of a schmarmy, pandering dipshit. You know, and the heat is that he's the champion, right? And so, but that was what Matt Cardona's gimmick was in Game Changer Wrestling was the heat was he's a WWE guy in Game Changer. So like that. So now he's in Ring of Honor as a babyface. The whole thing is just weird to me. So I'm just kind of done with it.
I want to put a fork in this Ring of Honor idiom. I really want to move to WWE because so many people are pushing back on me.
Okay. So Collision was fun. I Ricochet sucks. Okay, that's all I wanted to say is I can't stand Ricochet. Really good wrestler, but I'm done watching him on television. I'm kind of sick of him. All right, so Saturday night's main event. Let's get to that. So I watched it. I happened to actually enjoy Saturday night's main event. I thought that was a fun, you know, it's kind of like shutting your brain off and going into like an 80-minute action movie. It's like you just eat popcorn and you don't really learn anything. You don't really gain anything of value, but you're still having fun. That's kind of what it was for me. I thought the matches were a little bit fun. And then I thought the ending angle between Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes was pretty good. I like Kevin Owens as a heel performer. I think he's really good at it. And I like that they're doing the deal back in and Kevin Owens stole it and he's claiming he's the champion. I also liked Jesse Ventura on commentary. It was kind of a throwback to my childhood. I think Jesse Ventura is one of my favorite all-time heel commentators. I just always loved his work. So to have him on there, it was kind of cool. But Saturday night's main event, 8 p.m. on NBC, and without really like a ton of competition, did 1.5 million viewers on NBC. Now, NBC Universal and WWE and Chris LeGentle got it out to the media. They combined the numbers and had it over 2 million because they said 700,000 watched on Peacock, which is complete horseshit.
Bullshit.
And but people, of course, fell for it. So kudos to them.
Because so many people grew up watching The Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan that if WWE sends them something, these little jagbag jerk-offs can't wait to write something so that Nick Khan, they can genuflect in front of Triple H and Nick Khan. Like,
yeah.
What I mean, I'm telling you right now, 1.5 million people watched Saturday night's main event on NBC. That would have been one of the worst drawing SmackDown on Fox's.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been one of the bottom of the barrel. It was basically equal to what Raw did on Monday, the following Monday. So two nights later, that's basically what Raw did on USA Cable, which is in significantly less homes. So they weren't able to leverage the casual viewer. And we've been talking about it for a while. There is not an appetite for more wrestling on TV. Like, we are oversaturated like a mofo. They didn't draw any casual fans. There wasn't really any significant competition. It was a total bomb, and nobody wants to say it, but it bombed. It legitimately bombed on
because
television.
You can't say WWE. Like I said, that they peaked. And people are like, how can you say that? But because I'm just reading the numbers. Go to WrestleTix, right? Their Twitter. Yeah. Look at what the shows are doing. They're not selling as many tickets as they had been.
Now the argument that people are gonna make. Yeah, they're not doing bad. They're actually, and Dave mentioned it on his show this week, they're down, not by a lot, but slightly down. They're not down as bad as what AEW. And I think if people are like, if you're just trying to compare them to AEW, then you're deflecting. You're not trying to grapple with the fact, because JD and I on this show have been talking about the decline in AEW all year. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we are not trying to protect AEW by saying that WWE is going down. We're just talking about reality. Okay. Mm-hmm. The reality of the situation is they hit their peak. Now, could they gain in 2025? I think that they can.
They could.
Right.
They could.
They have peaked so far in 2024. They're down. Saturday night's main event bombed. They're still like about 75% sold for Madison Square Garden a couple of nights before they have their big holiday show on the 26th, the day after Christmas, which is their big show that they sell out every year. They're not all that close to selling it out. That is usually a barometer of how well they're doing. Now, again, Cena's coming back. Lynch is coming back. Charlotte's coming back. They're going to have all kinds of bells and whistles and gadgets. They're going to do a lot of big shows. But I think that I agree with you. I think that they have peaked.
Cena can sell some tickets, but he's done after WrestleMania. So then what's going to happen is they're going to rumble the Manias. They sell the most tickets, right? That's when they're typically at their hottest.
Correction. Cena's in through the end of 2025. He's until December. Yeah.
Sure he is. I believe that when I see it.
I think he is. I think he is. I think they're probably paying him a lot of money to do that. And his movies aren't exactly like setting the world on fire.
That's also true. But Charlotte's not a draw.
No.
Becky Lynch was a draw.
They're trying to put her in the Hall of Fame. I'm still not there yet.
I mean, like the voters said it. I mean, like she was a big draw in 2018.
Yeah.
She's not a draw anymore. She's been passed up by far more people in my company. Like now they're going to do some good numbers this year. No lie. I laugh every time Mike says a tweet saying couldn't even sell the building with two tickets left.
Yeah. I did do that to WWE the other day. They literally had like 12,000 tickets out, but there's two tickets left on the final count. And I said, wow, couldn't even sell it out.
I love that. I love that so much. And I'm saying they're still drawing. Well, 12,000 is good. Yeah. I'm not saying they're not. I'm telling you this right now. Like, I'm a teacher. I work with kids and I look at their projects. And so again, for a long time, I was getting a lot of WWE stuff. I was getting a lot of Roman Reigns and stuff. And I was listening to my kids talk the other day and this is about a month ago. And like they were saying, like, I don't watch it as much anymore. I'll watch the big stuff on Peacock, but it's boring.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing kids, and this was my bellwether when I knew they were on the upswings, when I heard my kids talking about and starting to talk about how much that they were into the Bloodline thing. And like, you know, I had a bunch of kids doing the one in class and stuff. Like that. I don't get that anymore.
No.
So, I mean, like, that's kind of my anecdotal evidence that I think it's cool. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying they're not selling anything. I'm not saying they're going back to 2017 numbers. I'm saying it's kind of peaked for right now. And you're going to get John Cena back. And then what is that going to stay? And this thing too, if he's there for a year, he don't mean as much that he means at the beginning. Cause then it becomes part of the show.
I think WrestleMania is going to be a monster again because
WrestleMania, of course it is.
Yeah. One, it looks like, I think Rock's coming in for Netflix and he's probably going to be on several of the shows in the first quarter. And I get the feeling it's going to be Rock versus Cody, which is going to be a monster of a match. Mm-hmm. And then it looks like Sean Ross Sapp is reporting that CM Punk versus Roman Reigns. CM Punk, gotta love him, talked his way into the WrestleMania main event. Probably going to be night one main event, but still WrestleMania main event. He finally looks like he's finally going to get it.
It would be so beautiful if he gets a night one main event after the shit he talked a few years ago.
Yeah. About how that's not the real main event.
About how you can go into MJP. Night one of a 13 night WrestleMania, whatever it was, and then he gets to do that. Like the ultimate hypocrite.
My hope is that match gets bumped for fucking Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch or something like that. Like that would just make me so happy. I don't think it will, but that would make me so happy.
Hilarious. I mean, like, it would just be super funny. And yeah, it's gonna drop because it's WrestleMania. And even when the WWE had lean years, like, WrestleMania sold really well. Like 2017, 2018, or 2016, 2017, when things weren't great for them, WrestleManias were doing great. So they're gonna they're phenomenal at promoting their big shows. And I think
I haven't watched WWE regularly since 2018, but I've not missed a WrestleMania. I have not missed WrestleMania. I plan on watching this coming up year. I went to WrestleMania 2 years ago. So yeah. And if I were in Vegas or if I was close to Vegas, I'd be going this coming up year because I don't care how old I get. I'm still a fan of The Rock. I liked his Christmas movie, Red One. I said it.
Oh, it was Red great. One. Red One was great. Christmas movie.
I loved it.
Me
it
too.
Fantastic. It bombed at the box office, but I don't care. It was still great.
That's a shame.
In theaters, it bombed, but right now it's like one of the all-time highest viewed movies on Amazon Prime history. I don't know what that even means, but they put out a press release for it. So,
dude, we took our kid to see that. My wife and I both agreed it's one of our favorite Christmas movies ever.
Yeah.
I loved Red One so much.
Yeah,
I can't say.
My wife and I watched it because I was like, because we were just looking at like more Christmas movies for the kid. Because she will just watch the same ones over and over again. We're getting sick of it. So I was like, well, The Rock's in a new Christmas movie, and that's Maui from Moana. Maybe she'll be interested in that. But I was like, it's rated PG-13. Maybe we should watch it ahead of time. But the Christmas witch on that is pretty scary. I don't know if my kid's ready for it yet. But maybe here in a year or two, she'll be down with it.
It was Sabrina, the evil Sabrina remake. That was her.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you could,
No.
Like they had, like in the comics, they had like, you know, Sabrina, you know, of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, right? From when we were kids.
I do. Melissa Joan Hart. Yeah.
Melissa Joan Hart. So they remade that show, but it was like evil and dark, right? Like she was an actual witch. It was on Netflix, I believe. Like, it was around the time Riverdale. So it was like not like a Riverdale spinoff, but like kind of like in that same vein. It was like dark. And now the girl who played the Christmas witch was the evil Sabrina. So.
Okay. Yeah. I thought she did a good job of playing like a scary girl. Yeah, she did really good. So everybody go check out Red One. And my wife is taking my daughter over to see Moana 2 here pretty soon. The boys are staying home for that one because we're not taking our baby to a theater just yet. Cause I just think it's really rude to the rest of the theater to take your baby to
100%.
So, yeah. 100%. So we're going to divide and conquer. And then this is next weekend. So during the day, my wife is taking my daughter to go see Moana 2. And then in the evening at 7 p.m., we got Gladiator 2. This is on base. Tickets are $5 on base. So I don't, And like popcorn is like $5 too, so I can go ham. But they're doing Gladiator 2 on base, so should be good.
Sonic 3 tomorrow. My wife took my son and his best friends to go see it like yesterday, and she texted me during the movie, because I was a tournament. She texted me and said, "This is the best Sonic movie," because we've gone to see it all with Andy, and like I didn't get to see Sonic 3, and I was a little bummed because Keanu Reeves' Shadow is just too awesome to me. But she's like, "This is the best Sonic movie." She's like, "It's so good. It's so much better than the other two." So hey,
since we're on movies, hit us with it. What'd you think of the new Superman trailer?
Thank you for reminding me of this. Yeah. So let's do this. Let's close out with Superman. I think Superman is the greatest pop culture American specific pop culture character ever created. He's such a unique American icon. You have this immigrant character that has all the power in the world, and he chooses to do right with it because it's the moral thing to do. Like, I love Superman so much. I watched this trailer. Right. And I've been looking forward to this because James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, is probably my favorite Marvel movie.
Beautiful. Yep. It's great.
It's such a good movie. Guardians 2 was really good. I loved Guardians 3.
Me too.
I thought The Suicide Squad was okay. Like, it's probably my favorite, next to Wonder Woman, probably my favorite of the Zack Snyder era DC movies. Peacemaker was a great show. So I'm a big Gunn fan. And I was really excited to see what he's going to do with Superman, because I like everything he said about it. I'm like, okay, this is kind of in line with what I want from the character. And the opening shot of this trailer is just Superman hitting the ground and being bloody and beaten up. And he whistles and you see the smoke coming up and it's Krypto, the super dog. And I'm such a little bitch. I got watching it because I just love this shit so much. And like everything about screamed Superman to me. It was triumphant, not dark, but you know there were big stakes. Feeling the vibe, Superman and Lois. You get to see some of the more obscure Justice League. Oh, you get some Mr. Terrific, stupid ass bowl haircut that he's always had. It's just. For someone that grew up in comics, in DC comics specifically, it's everything I wanted. And for the most part, people are like just loving this trailer, and I cannot wait till July 11th.
Yeah, I love the trailer. I can't wait. I was a fan of the original Superman movies with Christopher Reeve.
Me too.
This might be controversial. I don't think they hold up very well. Like, if you were to show them to like a new audience that's used to modern movies,
I agree.
Like, it's just extra cheese in those movies. And then like the more they did, I think the worse they got, but I still hold a spot for them in my heart because I watched them when I was a kid. And I just like in my head, Christopher Reeve is Superman. He's got a good documentary on, I believe on DC or on Max right now. So I really go check that out. But so in my head, he was Superman. But yeah, the inclusion of Krypto is going to be a big hit in the Gilbert household, because it took my daughter to go see Super Pets.
So I took Mandy too.
Yeah, I thought that one was really good. I thought they did a great job on that movie. So I think everybody is like ranking the DC comic book movies, and I think that the Super Pets movie needs to really be like kind of in consideration for some of those rankings, because I just thought that movie was tremendous. I thought it did a great job.
Fun, ton of fun, Super Pets. I really wanted to like Man of Steel a lot. It was shot by me. Like Smallville was down the road from here, where they shot Smallville. I really wanted to like it. Looks the part of Superman so well, but I just couldn't get on board with the Superman movie where millions of people die and he's breaking necks. Every time I watched those Snyder movies, and they got worse as they went along, I'm like, this guy just doesn't get it. He just doesn't understand what these characters are supposed to be. And like,
I think he, like, everything had to be in his, like, it had to be unapologetically Snyder, and it wasn't about DC. It was more about him. Like, he was making those movies about him. And so and every director, whenever they're directing something, it's an interpretation of what they see. But with him, it was like, it was more about his ego a little bit. And after listening, he was on Joe Rogan earlier this year. And after listening to him, I'm like, you know, that tracks. Like, he's wrong about his vision of what these superhero movies are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. He just doesn't. It's just not his wheelhouse, right? And he got a lot of leeway to do it. And I credit to the guy. He did his thing. He's got his fans for sure. There's people that love those movies, but it's not a lot of people that really like the source material. Yeah. Like the Snyderverse fans are their own thing, and they're not typically people that like comics. This seems to be more of a movie for people who just like Superman, who like superheroes. And it was, you can make that same criticism toward Tim Burton and the Batman movies from the 80s that I still love. Batman, and even more so Batman Returns, are very much Tim Burton. Eddie Oliva project 2 weeks ago, where I reviewed Batman Resurrection, the new book that's the unofficial Batman 1.5 Man and Batman Returns. Like, if you really like those Tim Burton Batman, this thing really does a great job. AO says the Snyder shut up. Yeah, because they right, and there are a lot of bots. Like, there was a Jeremy Finestone, my buddy from Speaking of Strong Style on Funky Media Network, likes to point out, like, send me an article about how Snyder really utilized a bot army to get word out about Justice League, and they still kind of do their thing, and they are fans. There are fans for sure, but man, they are fucking annoying. they're the most annoying of annoying fans on the internet.
Yeah. Everything is pro wrestling. They're a lot like certain pro wrestling companies have their own little bot army that will attack you every time you provide any, even if it's mild criticism of the favorite company. Speaking of which, let's end the show tonight talking about the latest update for TNA Wrestling. I normally would have covered this on Brace for Impact, but I didn't get a chance to do Brace for Impact this week. Well, I take it back. I actually did record a single episode of Brace for Impact, I think on Tuesday. When we got some news for TNA. So TNA has a new TV deal, JD, and they have replaced the WWE on Sportsnet 360 in Canada. It's the number one sports station in Canada. It is actually a better sports station than TSN, so I'm told. I don't know shit about Canada. But everybody's saying, like, this is actually going to be like they have as far as ability to gain viewers, like they're going to be on the biggest network of all wrestling companies in the country of Canada. So they actually have a better TV outlet than AEW does. And then of course WWE is going to be on Netflix. So they're on Netflix everywhere. So that would include Canada. So they're actually going to have they're on a bigger station than TSN, and TSN is what holds AEW. And then AEW is on at like weird times on TSN, and sometimes it's on the app. Their deal in Canada is not very good. So TNA actually has a better TV deal in Canada than AEW. I get the feeling that AEW is getting paid a lot more money for their deal on TSN than TNA would be on Sportsnet 360. But I think this is a good day for TNA. They're a Canadian-owned company. They have now left the Fight Network, and starting on January 2nd, they could see TNA Impact, Explosion, Impact in 60, and a bunch of classic programming all over. That was reported by John Pollock today. So that's a big deal for TNA, man.
Yeah, good for them. Like, I'm going to be super curious to see what that translates to into viewers, because like when you look at Canadian ratings for stuff, the raw number is just significantly lower than it is in the U.S. I don't think the U.S. people in the U.S. realize just how dramatically smaller the population base of Canada is. You know, square mileage wise, it's big.
It's 10% of the U.S. population. If we have 300 million, they got 30 million. So that's kind of how it was explained to me. So I don't know what the population is right now, but it's like 10% of the U.S. population. So,
I'm super curious to see what those numbers will translate into, to be honest with you. I don't know. I think I'm really happy for them. I'm curious to see what that means. Cause we've talked about TNA becoming like a largely Canadian based company at times, especially when Scott was running things, but that seemed to go another way. I mean, it's, I don't want to say its roots are in Canada, but it's like present is certainly Canada.
Well, their parent company operates out of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And so, but their base, their home base, essentially where they do all the productions in Nashville. So they're, you know, Toronto based and Nashville based. So they got a mix of a lot of Canadian and American employees, but their entire leadership chain, Gail Kim all the way up, is all Canadian. So like Anthony Chone and all the different people that work for that company, they're all Canadian. Lynn Asper's out of Winnipeg, I believe. So, but I think that this is actually a better TV deal than what they have in the United States. I think they'll probably get roughly more, probably end up having more viewership than in Canada than they do in the US, because of just how, it's not just how small Access TV is, because Access TV is probably available in more homes, but because it's the number one sports station in Canada, they just have more people watching it, right? So even if it's not as available, it doesn't reach as many people, there's just more people per capita that are actually watching that channel than Access TV.
I'm super curious to see what those numbers turn out to be.
Yeah,
I really am. I want to revisit this. When does it start?
January 2nd. So honestly, I wish they would have started later in January when they do their first live episode. I think it's the I think it's 27th is when they do their first live episode of Impact since like over 10 years. So I would be curious to see what it looks like though.
You got to give Impact TNA a lot of credit, because I remember going to Impact tapings at Skyway Studios in Nashville back in 2021, right? And just seeing kind of where things were for them at the time in that tiny little studio. It was tiny, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're going to go back to live TV and how much they've really grown, right? Which just, it's just the amazing thing about wrestling is like things, people just assume, like this is just in general, people just assume that things just expand constantly, right? And don't understand the idea of businesses that they're up and they're down and they boom and they bust and they, you know, companies that exist for a long time have waves, right? Like sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, sometimes you're in the middle. And it's fun to see TNA kind of on an upswing right now, like for TNA, like, and it's been, it's been cool. It's been cool to watch. And I like that they've got this.
Yeah, it's kind of been a slow like build, because I think in 2023 they were still in some of the similar venues, where they started to get lots of sellouts in 2023, pushing capacity in a lot of the buildings. And then in 2024 they started to go into bigger buildings, and like next thing you know they're doing 2,000-3,000 people in certain venues. And then in 2025 they're like in April they're going to where the USC Trojans play basketball, that like you can get like upwards of 3,000-4,000 people in there. And then they're doing the UBS Arena where the New York Islanders play hockey in New York, and they already sold like almost 2,000 tickets like within a couple of days, which like we're talking Impact, we're talking TNA, right? So I'm not trying to compare them to AEW and to WWE, because those two companies have a significantly larger budget. So what TNA is doing is purely like grassroots type of marketing. They don't really have the money to go spend on a local marketing campaign. They're just getting their wrestlers out in front of people, getting them in the local media, like Kazarian and Nick Nemeth were at USC Trojans basketball game, and they got, you know, they did a tour with all of them, like a press tour with the Trojans and stuff like that. So that's how they're getting out there and selling tickets, is just by getting out there and working. They don't have the power of their television show to be able to sell tickets for them.
No, they're hustling, man. Their street team game is really good. They're really good at, they've gotten really good at selling tickets. We bashed them back in the day, back when Base for Impact was our main show. And in that time, they busted their ass to sell seats in just about every town they visit. And you have to show respect for what TNA management has been really able to do to sell tickets the last few years. As far as the one concern I have in 2025 is them retaining talent. They're going to lose Jordan Grace. They're going to lose probably Gresham. They're going to lose Joe Hendry at some point. Do you think it's a good idea? Now, here's the problem, is that WWE started this their ID program, right? Which is going to force AEW to start really picking up a lot more of the other indie guys that aren't getting tagged. If you're TNA, I think you should be using these WWE ID guys.
I think so too, because I think for a long time I didn't want them to embrace the idea of being a feeder league, but I think them being the feeder league is kind of what helped gain some of the momentum that they got in 2024 when they did embrace it. When they did send their talent over to WWE and like got them in front of bigger eyeballs. And then what did WWE send? Feeder type of talent, like talent that never wins any matches, that are not getting pushed, just there and TNA to get reps. And that turned out to be like really good for both sides, right? And so I think that if you're WWE and you sign these WWE, these ID people, I think that you would want them to go to TNA to get the repetitions, like kind of sending them on excursion, like go to TNA for a year and then we'll bring you up to NXT. And then because they're not, and if you're TNA, I think you might as well be okay with that. Cause what are they getting right now? They don't have the resources to compete with WWE or AEW when they want a piece of talent, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not going to outbid AEW for Speedball, for instance, or they're not going to outbid WWE for Jordynne Grace. So who are they getting? They're getting the runoff from both companies at this point. And they have to be able to do that effectively.
Anyone decent by the end of next year is going to be signed to something. You're either going to have a Ring of Honor deal, a WWE ID deal. You're going to be with New Japan Strong. Like everyone is going to be tagged something. So if you're TNA, I think we've talked about this before about TNA being like Memphis, right? And a good place for talent to stop over or young talent to develop, right? I think more now they can really be Memphis in the early 90s. Right when WWF was using them and having like Tatanka and Owen Hart and like Coco Beware and guys just go down to Memphis to help Memphis out and help Lawler and Jarrett. And I think that that's a good spot for them right now because they can really help be the place where, like, you know, because I'm pretty sure NXT is going to be performance center guys, you know, and they've made it like pretty obvious that the PC is going to be for your NIL athletes. And the ID is going to be for your indie workers.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's really smart of them because the indie guys aren't getting better at the PC. They're just getting hurt. Yes. Right. And I think the PC is going to be a place where you just kind of breed out the guys who don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know? And then in hopes, like when those people leave, you hope if you're WWE, it's like, look, we just think you're not ready right now. You need to go out to the indies and hustle and get ready, and then maybe we'll bring you back. And just not everybody loves pro wrestling enough to go and do that.
Well, that's kind of what AEW's done too. It's very much the Japanese model of we believe in you, we've invested in you, now it's on you to get better.
Yeah.
Right. And you see that with guys, like some guys go get good, and some guys, you know, are Shooter Umino who don't, you know, like it kind of comes down to you and how good you want to be. And I'm sorry, it's the deck is stacked. So if you're an NIL guy, you're going to get more opportunities, right? But if you're an ID guy, you want to do this anyway. So you're going to keep taking your bookings, but you've got like, you know, it's like you got drafted, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is.
Like baseball specifically. It's like baseball draft more so than like a football draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause baseball draft, they send you through like their single A, double A, triple A farm system, essentially.
Right.
And well, TNA will have their core of group of men and women. Yeah. They'll have the core group of men and women who are really good wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Right. They'll have like a good 10 to 15. And then everybody else is just people kind of coming in and out.
So you got to look at it to continue the baseball analogy, right? A lot of good prospects, they go to double A, right? They spend their time in double A, and then oftentimes they'll skip triple A and go right to the majors, right? Your triple A is where a lot of times utility guys come from, right? So I think that if NXT is double A, TNA can be triple A.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, because triple A is where, like, if you're the major league team and you get somebody down with an injury, well, you're going to bring somebody up from AAA, somebody that's ready to go. Right. And when somebody does get injured and they need to rehab themselves, you send them to AAA to rehab for a while. Sometimes you send them down to single A or double A, depending on how much time they need. Mm-hmm. But when I lived in the Bay Area, the Giants would send people to the Sacramento River Cats. And so when you go to their games, you'd occasionally get to see some of the big league players. Mm-hmm. In those games, while they're trying to get back to the big leagues, right? So that's kind of what it is. And we're not saying that to diminish anything that TNA is.
No.
I think that's like a good place for them to be. You bring those people in, and like they can ultimately put over your talent, right? Especially like your core group, because you got you guys like Moose and Eddie Edwards. Like they're not going anywhere. Like Eddie Edwards is so happy here. Like he can, did you see him slap the shit out of a fan the other night?
No, I missed it.
So at Final Resolution last week, Eddie, who like wrestles with a t-shirt now, he's still really good in the ring, but you can tell brother likes his bread, right?
It's Tommy Dreamer. He's the new Tommy Dreamer.
Essentially, he's kind of patterned himself after Tommy Dreamer. And he's in the front row. He slaps a water bottle out of a guy's hand. The guy then slaps Eddie right across the face. Very light slap, but a slap nonetheless. And Eddie just slaps the piss out of the guy and then shoves him to the ground. That guy ends up getting arrested. I'm like, Eddie, you kind of started that shit when you slapped the bottle out of his hand. But we're on the side of Eddie because we like Eddie. He's just like
very
comfortable.
Very Japanese. It's something you get away with in Japan. Like, hey,
yeah. And then like the Hardy Boys, they just signed a new deal. Like, they're very comfortable in TNA. Moose is a guy that's been here for like 10 years. He's not going anywhere. He loves it in TNA. He gets paid really well, and he seems to be doing great in TNA.
The wrestling ecosystem needs TNA.
Yeah.
Which is why it survived, right? TNA has survived for over 20 years now because it's necessary.
Yeah.
It's necessary. You need TNA. Like, it's, I don't want to say it's like the lifeblood of pro wrestling, but I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the liver of professional wrestling. Like, you need it. You don't think about it a lot, but if it's poison, you're going to die. And pro wrestling is not a good place if TNA is not healthy.
Right. So, case in point, one of the biggest moments, one of the moments that got over the most at the Hammerstein Ring of Honor final battle was Jay Lethal coming out as Black Machismo and then Jeff Jarrett coming out with the guitar to help him in his match, right? Like TNA has kind of got its tentacles all over the American wrestling landscape.
Whether you want to admit it or not.
Yes. Yes. So one last point I want to make, and then we'll go ahead and call it a night. I do think that TNA's new TV deal in Canada on Sportsnet 360 does send a signal to television companies in the U.S. that they're not married to staying on Access, because the whole reason TNA exists right now, that it was bought out of bankruptcy, was for Anthem to have a show, have their top rated show on the Fight Network. And it's been the top rated show on the Fight Network ever since. And then they bought Access TV to put TNA on it. So, and now it's been the top rated network on Access TV. Well, earlier this year, they moved Invicta, which they purchased to put on Access. They moved Invicta over to CBS Sports Network. I don't know what the ratings are like. I don't think they're tracked by Nielsen, but that's a much larger, much more viewed station than Access is, I would assume. It's got college basketball, college football, all that stuff. I think this does open up the possibility that Matt Hardy has been talking about for a while, that TNA might be moving off of Access. What that would look like, I don't know. Like I said, there's no demand for more television, for more wrestling on television. And I'm not saying they're going to get to USA. I'm not saying anything like that. But could they move over to a station kind of like CBS Sports Network? I don't think that's a crazy thing to think. I think that would actually be a real possibility. Paramount Network? No. USA? No. Like Sci-Fi? Probably not. Fox Sports 1? Probably not. But something like a CBS Sports Net, which is not a huge network, I could see them upgrading to that station.
I'm bullish on this one, mainly because there's such saturation in the marketplace as far as pro wrestling goes.
Agreed.
And like when WWE leaves, typically, now we saw in Canada, we saw that this was the opposite, but typically when WWE leaves a network, they're not replacing with pro wrestling.
Yeah.
We heard rumors earlier this year of AEW taking over on Fox. Those seem to have petered out. Like, if there were early discussions of that, it didn't really go anywhere. And maybe if AEW was stronger on TNN or TNT, TNN, Jesus Christ, my brain is in 2000s tonight. TNT, actually.
That's the 90s country station. Sorry.
It is, actually. TNN, wow. The Nashville network. Jesus. I think that you would see more action toward that, but that seems to have fizzled. Maybe it'll come back at some point, but I mean, well, right now Fox is killing with sports. So I don't know, maybe in the springtime, something. I don't know. I don't foresee it right now.
Yeah.
So let's see how the marketplace feels about pro wrestling.
There is no demand for pro wrestling on television. The ratings are dictating that. AEW is way down. TNA is TNA. WWE, as we saw, adding Saturday Night's Main Event did not work, right? But with them moving off of USA, and I'm not saying USA is going to pick up TNA. That's not what I'm saying. But there's less. And Rampage just died. They just taped the very last episode of Rampage. That's never coming back. So, which tells me that there really isn't a demand for more wrestling on television with Rampage going away. And it looks like maybe this Fox deal would have has fizzled out. So I don't know, man. I think 2025 with TNA is going to be super interesting. They're taking some big swings. I do want to I do want to shout out Myron Kidd here, because he had the comment earlier that that the number two company selling 25,000 tickets in a baseball stadium was not very good. But he's very confident that TNA will pull out a great attendance number for the UBS Arena show. Brother, UBS Arena is a 20,000-seat venue, and they set it up for 4,000. So there you go. That's TNA set it up for 4,300, and I think they'll sell that out. But we're saying the same thing, right? So come on.
Yeah, let's be consistent.
Yeah, like, and that is really good for freaking TNA.
Yeah, it is. 4,000 people in an arena, a real arena for TNA. That's good, but a lot of it's going to be tarped off, realistically speaking. And like, you got to kind of own that, because like, this is what wrestling companies do. They rent arenas and they base it. Okay, I think we could sell this many tickets conservatively. Yeah. And if they could sell more, well, then they open it up a little bit. If they don't, then they contract it a little bit. You know, it's, believe me, I went to Dynamite a couple weeks ago, and you know, it was, I've been to a lot of the Dynamites at the Wintrust, and sometimes they're packed, and recently it gets a little bit smaller and a little bit smaller, a little bit smaller. There's less seats on the floor. You know, it kind of is what it is with wrestling. Yeah. And it's cyclical. I always worry about the cycle going down because I've seen it so many times in my life, but TNA is doing well right now. If you'd have told me 3 years ago they'd be selling 4,000 tickets to anywhere, I'd have called you crazy. But here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been like, what? Are you just rounding up homeless people and putting them in the bleachers? Like, that's what I would have thought you were talking about. But
it's an Eric Bischoff trick, actually.
Yeah. That's what they did at Center Stage. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us this time on the Mike and JD show. Everybody have a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
If any news breaks during the week, I'll probably just hop back on. JD, as you already know, is super busy. Brace for Impact will be back live on Saturday morning, so you guys can interact with me and chat with me on there. But again, if any news breaks during the week, I will just do a quick episode for everybody. Please have a very Merry Christmas. Take care of your families. Love each other this holiday season. I would greatly appreciate it. Everybody be as nice as humanly possible. And if I say anything stupid on Twitter, please feel free to just laugh, because it's all jokes.
Mm-hmm. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody. All right, everybody, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This is it.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.